to this now. Was South Africa's negotiated settlement a Faustian deal? 30 years into democracy, there are many young South Africans who feel that because the liberation movements did not, in fact, roll with their tanks into Pretoria to achieve freedom, that they kowtowed to the enemy, the apartheid regime. They made a pact with their oppressors that would guarantee the unfinished business of transforming our country. They say, look around you. We remain the most unequal society in the world. The face of poverty remains black. Mandela and his comrades, they say, sold out the revolution. They compromised principles for personal gain. I mean, how do we have a president who is a billionaire when there are millions of the masses who have political freedom, but whose children go to bed hungry at night? We've told you about children who learn still under trees, who still have the risk of falling into a pit latrine at school, who might even be swept away by torrents of rivers as they cross to get to school. Our next guest is the author of really the book you should get your hands on. If you buy any other book this year, this is the one. And it's a book that seeks to debunk the idea that those who negotiated this settlement sold out the revolution. But he also wants to diagnose, shall we call it, patient South Africa and offer a treatment plan. The book is called Soul of a Nation. The writer is the scholar, academic and businessman Oyama Mabandla, who joins us in the studio. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Your book, broadly speaking, seeks to tell the political through the personal, doesn't it? It details your own odyssey as a young man, escaping into exile, then of course coming back to South Africa. You were full of hope, but later I would imagine despair.
Thanks, Bongani, for inviting me to your show, and thanks to your listeners. Yes, indeed, you know, we're hopeful about the trajectory of what we had crystallized, you know, as freedom fighters. Both those who are in exile, like myself, and the masses of activists who really, you know, faced the brunt of apartheid, those who were jailed, those who died. And in many respects, the first 15 years sort of vindicated that hope, because things did go well, you know, under Mandela and Mbeki. They were not perfect, but the statistics show, the metrics show that South Africa was on the up. You know, we got out of junk status under Mbeki in 2001. Unemployment fell, you know. The debt to GDP ratio, you know, improved. Interest payments, you know, lowered. We had a budget surplus that we used essentially to bankroll our massive social relief program. We're growing at rates of 3.8%, you know, between 2001 and 2008 when Mbeki was defenestrated. And Mbeki quintupled, you know, the black middle class. So there was hope. Something right was going on.
There was a sense that this new dispensation was delivering on for those sacrifices that many of you made.
Indeed.
Just for the listeners who may not know, talk to me about what informed a 17-year-old to skip the country, to go into exile. How does a 17-year-old make the choice to say, I'm leaving all I know because this cause is worth it?
Well, it was the zeitgeist, you know, as the Germans would say, the philosophers would say, the spirit of the times. You know, we're all infected, you know, by it. Steve Biko had essentially engendered a cultural revolution in how we saw ourselves as black people. And that led ineluctably to kids rising against the imposition of Afrikaans as a medium of instruction. I mean, that was an utter humiliation, you know, that the Boers sought to subject us to. And we rebelled. That impacted me. As I mentioned in the book, you know, as a 13-year-old, you know, I was in Cape Town in December of 76, and I was attracted to the barricades, you know, to see young people skirmishing with the police. A year later, I was at Steve Biko's funeral, you know, at 14. You know, my first rally, so to speak, amongst 20,000 people, a pageantry of resistance and mourning and celebration all at the same time.
And that was only the beginning of the journey, because, of course, as you cross the border, there were moments where you could very easily but for a few seconds, but for a few decisions going one way or the other, where you could have easily lost your life.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if it wasn't for a misunderstanding, you know, as I've written with Sistine Bohani, I would have been amongst those killed in Lesotho in 1982. The guy I lived with in Guinea, my roommate, died. I had left 6 weeks before this, and he hadn't. And the house I lived in was amongst the 12 that were targeted for attack that night. And as I say, my roommate was killed. So it's cosmic. I call it cosmic. A cosmic quack that intervened to spare my life. It was that misunderstanding with Sistine Bohani. So she's my matron saint.
So you've gone into exile. You have, at your own personal risk, been exposed to extreme danger, nearly losing your life. You've seen comrades fall. South Africa transitions to some kind of negotiated settlement. There is the peace talks. There is CODESA 1. There's CODESA 2. One of the things that I thought was really interesting for me was your observation that this was a settlement. And I think about a divorce settlement. And I think anybody who's ever signed one will know there's no victor there. What's your thinking around the idea of a settlement?
A settlement is never perfect, but it is perfectible. By that I mean it is something we keep improving on through our own struggles to improve the deal that was reached in 1994. 1994 was not the end to the struggle. It gained us political space and freedom and agency to shape our future. You know, it gave us state power, you know, for the first time. You know, a liberation movement actually inherited such a technologically advanced, you know, state like the Republic of South Africa. So we could have used that, you know, to pry open more freedom for our people, more economic freedom for our people. And the fact that we failed in doing so, as I say, for 15 years we tried, and you could see visible progress. The fact that the ANC plunged us into a dystopian nightmare in 2007 by electing Jacob Zuma, who was not interested in the things that Mbeki was interested in, which is improving the lives of our people through policy and engagement. The fact that there was this failure doesn't mean that the Pact of 1994 was a sellout.
How do you respond to younger voices, perhaps more radical voices, who see it as a sellout, who say that it was only ever going to work if you had the likes of Mandela or Mbeki in charge, but it did not prepare for the rise of a Jacob Zuma?
Well, I say people must seize back their agency. I think that's amongst the major messages of this book. You know, we live in an era, we're beyond heroes. We're all heroes now. You know, we've seen heroes die. You know, Mandela wasn't going to be here forever. Thabo Mbeki was kicked out of office by forces stronger than him. Chris Hani was killed. Steve Biko was killed. It's time we seize back our agency as citizens of this country to get the government that we deserve.
How do we do this?
By getting involved with the political project, by not just complaining, you know, by young people going into the ANC and taking it over from a leadership that they feel is disappointing. That's one of the options. Two, by forming political parties, as Malima did and Songezo Zibuye has done. Because whatever you say about Malima's antics in politics, he's a factor in our politics. He's a factor in our democracy. And that's what we need to do. We cannot just complain. As citizens don't complain. Citizens don't sit and marinate sentimentally about the past. Ooh, Chris Hani. Ooh, Oliver Tambo. Citizens act.
Is it that simple? I'm looking at the front page of the Business Day today, and they're talking about jittery investors who are weighing out all sorts of scenarios come the elections of 2024, which parties will be in coalition together and what those look like. Already there is concern around uncertainty in terms of our policy direction, depending on how the maths works out. If the ANC dips below 50%, as many polls are predicting it surely must, how do we engage with what is now going to be quite very clearly an unfamiliar scenario?
Well, democracy is about consistent experimentation, consistent and persistent experimentation. So we will experiment with the unfamiliar, if you may. But I don't actually see the ANC falling appreciably below 50%. I think at worst it will be 48%. And I put it between 48 and 52%. So I think as the returns of the elections come in, investor confidence will be restored that we will not have another ANC-EFF coalition, which has proven disastrous, you know, in the municipalities. That's my prediction. But if that doesn't happen, you know, and you have to have a cacophonous, ramshackle coalition government, then again, it calls upon us as citizens to change that scenario in the next election, or by holding those who've been voted into power, whether it's a coalition government, accountable to our desires.
One of the things you mention in your book is an idea that is beginning now to gain traction. We've already heard the former president, Thabo Mbeki, mention it. Cyril Ramaphosa says he supports it, the idea of a national dialogue. Do we need another CADESA 2, more talk? Conference?
I think democracies need to refresh and renew themselves periodically. This milestone, the 30th anniversary, we need to pause and ask ourselves, are we doing well? And I think all the metrics are pointing south, frankly. You know, education and public hospitals have ground to a halt. You know, crumbling infrastructure. People not voting. They say only 30% of eligible voters bothered, you know, to show up in the last election. Now, that's malaise. That's alienation. That should worry. Especially a country dealing with the kind of gargantuan challenges that we face. Like 42% unemployment, using the broader measure. 42% unemployment is a tinder for a social explosion. The kind that we saw, you know, 2 years ago in July of 2022. And there is a sense that it could come back in steroids unless we do our work to make sure that this democracy delivers the economic dividend. And I think the Indaba would be about examining why unemployment has been such a stubborn lineament of what democracy. It's never fallen below 29%.
Many people will say, but we most certainly know some of the reasons that have brought us here. We even at times come up with policies that, if implemented, could take us a lot further. And as we round up this conversation, because I really want to point people to reading the actual book, I'm thinking of the biblical plea by Jacob. Is there any blessing for me? Is there anything left? Is there any hope left about what we could do better?
Yep. I think this is a grand inheritance that we should be proud of. We fought to bring it about. And by engaging as citizens politically with the political project, we will get the desires we wish for. See, the political project is indispensable to the salvation of any nation. If we yield it to politicians or those we think are beneath us, then we will get that type of result.
You get the leaders you vote for.
You get the democracy you deserve.
Soul of a Nation is the title of the book, A Quest for the Rebirth of South Africa's Values. The author is Oyama Mabandla. It's available at bookstores everywhere.